This is the Oanda Podcast.
You're listening to the Oanda Market Insights Podcast, talking to Oanda senior market analysts from across the world. And today it's Craig Earlham in London. Craig, good afternoon. How are you doing?
I'm very good. How are you?
Very well. Now, considering it's August, it's been a pretty busy week. What was a highlight for you?
Yeah, it's been quite an eventful week, really. I mean, when you consider the fact that there's not exactly been many headlines, it's not like there's been massive data points or big event-driven moves in the markets. It's kind of just been a case of we got the week off to quite a turbulent start with the moves in the commodity space, the flash crash in gold. But in the equity space, it's not really been volatile, but we've just been seeing these steady gains. European indices trading at record highs. The Euro Stoxx 50 has made 7 consecutive days of gains, which I think it's the first time it's done that since 1999. So it's almost kind of like out of nowhere, we've seen a lot of positivity emerging in these markets, and we're just seeing European stocks chipping away. And almost in the background, we hear a lot about US indices being at record highs, but maybe just not enough about the fact that European indices have got there relatively quietly. So there has been plenty of action in these markets. Currency markets have been a little bit quieter, if I'm perfectly honest. But elsewhere, like I say, it has been quite an interesting week.
Oil continues to slide in price, perhaps some pressure from the US, one of the reasons behind that.
So again, it's been a really interesting week for oil. So at the start of the week, we started to see oil coming off, or we saw oil continuing to come off its highs and actually go back towards the lows it was at last month. And that was driven by, it seems, kind of growth concerns. We've seen the Delta spread in China. We're talking about relatively low number of cases, but what we have in China compared to other countries is the crackdowns are a lot more severe and come a lot quicker. So even though the numbers are still quite low, we are seeing pretty severe restrictions being put in place. You can see, for example, one of the busiest ports in the world in China actually being partially closed yesterday. That announcement came because there was a single case. So this is one of the terminals that this port has been closed because of a single case. I mean, you wouldn't see that anywhere else, but in China, they're very much trying to get in control of the spread before it becomes in any way a significant problem. But the fact that there are little cases popping up here and there is causing great concern that we're not saying it necessarily will get out of hand there, but if you continue to put restrictions in place, then that's going to affect growth. But it's also going to affect the supply chains, because we've seen that talked about a lot, about these supply chain issues, bottlenecks emerging as a result. So I think there is that little bit of concern that because we're seeing surging cases in China, but also elsewhere, that's really taken the wind out of the sails of crude, and we've seen it push back towards the lows. I think in Brent crude is around $67, in WTI crude around $65. It came off the lows over the last couple of days, but then it turned lower again. We had commentary from the White House pushing for OPEC to turn on the taps more, saying that they're not doing enough, they're not getting oil back online quick enough, and that prices are too high. We've become used to this over the last 4 or 5 years with the Trump White House. Trump spoke a lot about oil and spoke a lot about OPEC. Maybe expected a little bit less from the Biden administration, but clearly trying to give OPEC a bit of a nudge here probably will make very little difference in terms of their decision making on that front, especially when we're going into a period over the next few months where we could see demand growth lag a little bit because of the spread of Delta. And then finally, like I say, the port closure today seems to have given it a bit of a hit once more. So yeah, it has been a bit of a volatile week as far as crude is concerned. Where it trades now, we've got WTI just shy of $69, Brent crude just shy of $71. So really not too far from those lows, but very much still range bound between those kind of broad ranges, $65.75 in WTI and $67.77 for Brent.
Interesting what you were saying before about the coronavirus numbers across Europe. Not quite the same in the USA, is it? There are continual concerns about certain states, perhaps those that haven't been vaccinated to the same extent, that have seen rising numbers. I know markets were a bit spooked by that earlier on in the week. Is that now settled down?
So I think the greater concern is China. I think the US is going to be very reluctant to impose severe restrictions at this point. So I think the greater concern is probably China on that side of things. We are seeing, obviously, cases spreading in the US as well. And as you've already alluded to, it does seem to be appearing more in the places where we've seen low vaccination rates. And I think that's going to be a really interesting one to follow because, as I say, there is going to be a real reluctance to impose any form of severe restrictions. But what we have to remember from an economic standpoint, it's not just the restrictions that are imposed on people, it's also the restrictions that people impose on themselves. It's the way it influences people's behaviour, the decisions to go to a sporting event, to go to a restaurant, to see friends. Obviously, some people are going to be a little bit more lax than others. But on an aggregate level, if people are being a little bit more restrictive themselves because they're seeing this kind of surge, then that's going to take an economic toll as well. So it is going to be interesting to monitor the kind of situation with the US over the course of the next few months and also elsewhere. The ZEW survey this week from Germany and the other area was really interesting because it dipped quite considerably. Despite the fact that the economy is doing quite well, and the two reasons that were given for the dip, and it dipped far more than was expected, was one that that while they were happy with where the economy had got to, they actually thought a large portion of the growth that they were expecting happened already, and that could therefore mean lower growth in the coming quarters. But also the second was the Delta variant, and this is places with high vaccine rates. But I think the uncertainty that the spread that Delta gives and what it means in terms of people's behaviours and the like, I think that is something that took its toll on the survey in countries where their vaccination rates are extremely high. I think that's going to be something that's going to be really interesting to monitor over the next few months. I still remain quite optimistic, but that is certainly a downside risk.
Just one story I wanted to ask you about, Craig. On Wednesday, we were discussing the big Polynetwork cryptocurrency hack. Polynetwork, of course, lost at the time $610 million. Polynetwork asked the hacker very politely if he or she would return the money, and it's actually happened. The hacker has returned the money and has been offered $500,000 as a thank you. We don't quite know whether the hacker has accepted the offer yet, but what a story.
Yeah, it's been handled extremely politely. I mean, I think there was a few interesting takeaways really from this story. One is that the hacker has suggested that it was never their intention to keep the money, that what they effectively wanted to show is that it can be done and that there is a vulnerability within the network, and it's almost part of the joy it brings them is highlighting these flaws, and that they are a crypto enthusiast themselves. They've been offered $500,000 as kind of a thank you reward because they believe that this was a genuine attempt to expose a flaw as opposed to an actual malicious hack. But it seems that they've rejected the cash because they've said that this isn't what they're after, that they don't need the money effectively. But then equally, I think they've opened up a kind of like a, maybe it's not a just giving account, but they've offered or opened up a kind of donation account for other crypto enthusiasts to kind of donate to the cause. So it's a very funny story. It's a very strange story. But I think what's really important, and I think that almost the kind of biggest takeaway from this is the way that the community rallied around this, what happened, this hack happened, and this entire community of people rallied around to try and make this as difficult as possible, to try and cut off all avenues for the hacker to withdraw these funds and to successfully get away with any cash whatsoever. So I think that was one of the really real interesting takeaways. The kind of flip side of that is, if what this hacker has said is genuine, and you read the messages and it does actually seem quite genuine, if the intention was never to get away with the cash, then you don't really know how successful all of this has been. And if this was a malicious hack and this was an attempt to steal $600 million, or the hacker suggested it could have been $1 billion if they wanted to, then would the community have been able to stop it? Would they have been as successful? Or would it have really exposed a deep flaw? Who, I guess we'll never know, and it may be something that will come in the future. But I think, as you said, it just makes it a really fascinating story to follow, because you look at something like the stable coins with Tether, they could just freeze the 33 million of coins, but it's not possible on the other networks, and therefore it becomes very much this kind of match between the community and the hacker to see who can effectively win out at the end of the day. And it seems that this time they were both on the same side, but it may not be the case in the future. So I think this is going to be a really interesting one to watch, because one thing it has done, irrespective of everything that's followed since, is it's shown that there are vulnerabilities, especially in a network like this one, that are still vulnerable, still relatively new, and therefore can be exposed. And we'll see how these type of things will materialize going forward. Because one thing again that we've seen a lot of this week is that there have been a lot of attacks on these particular networks over the course of this year, far more than there was last year. And I imagine this kind of publicity is both going to broaden the defence of it, but also going to maybe make it vulnerable to further attack.
Well, it definitely gets my vote as story of the week. Before we talk about the week to come, I suppose the standout data from this side of the Atlantic in the UK was the latest GDP numbers, which found a growth of 4.8% in Q2. How was that greeted by the markets?
I think it was really encouraging data. So the 4.8% itself was actually in line with market expectations, but I think the underlying data was really encouraging. The fact that it was driven so much in that second quarter by the consumer, I think, was a really important thing. Obviously, we know that the consumer is extremely important in the UK, but it's also indicative of behaviour as we were coming towards the end of restrictions. Remember, this data only covers up to the end of June. Full restrictions ended late in July. So there's still a lot of data to come where restrictions had been fully lifted. And we know, obviously, that the Euros, people are going out a lot and socialising more, going to bars and going to big public gatherings. But the Euros actually finished in the middle of July. So there's going to be a certain amount of carryover there as well. And also the other really encouraging thing was the fact that the monthly figures for June, the month-on-month readings, was higher than expected, driven again by the services industry. And services accounts for more than 3/4 of total UK output. So the fact that services drove a larger than expected growth number for that final month of the quarter in June really does bode well going into the rest of the summer months. So I think there was some really good data within the data of those UK GDP figures, but naturally downside risks remain, and we're always looking forward. We've seen a really encouraging reopening. We're seeing good numbers compared to what we could have seen on the virus. Things can change, and they can change quickly, but I think there's a lot of cause for encouragement that we are now almost a month in to restrictions being fully lifted, and there is absolutely no talk of any being reimposed at this point.
Indeed, and you know, anecdotally, I mean, I've been to central London over the last few days, and I wouldn't say it's back to what it was, but certainly it's busier. More people coming in, probably from England and the rest of the UK on day trips or for a few days. It's good to see central London back there. And we have these stories about the shortages of lorry drivers and lorry drivers being offered more money, an encouraging sign for UK PLC.
It is, and it's interesting that this is kind of now thrown up the I feel like I've heard a lot more about Brexit in the last 3 or 4 weeks than I've heard for the last 8 months. But I think pictures of kind of empty shelves and almost the kind of Brexit versus the pandemic debate has really got really hotted up over the course of the last few weeks. What's the cause of the empty shelves? What's the cause of the labour shortage? And the fact is, it's probably a combination of the two things. If you've got less labour since Brexit, and you've also got those that are available getting pinged and being forced to stay at home, then this is going to be the result. But I think the fact that the pingdemic is a temporary thing is something that's that means that none of these downsides should last. Obviously, if we continue to see these kind of labour shortages, then this is something that the government does have to address, because wage rises obviously are a positive thing for those employed within the sector. But what we don't want to see is massive inflation in the UK as a result of a labour shortage, meaning that wages are having to rise across the board. Because what that ultimately means is the Bank of England are going to have to start tapering back their asset purchase programme, raising interest rates to deal with more permanent measures of inflation rather than the transitory inflation we're currently seeing. And that could be a real headwind as far as the economy is concerned. So it kind of there's the upside and the downside, I guess, that you can really take away from this.
Okay, let's look ahead to the next week or so. Again, we're right at bang in the middle of August, so it's bound to be quieter than usual. What are the standouts that we should look out for?
So I think next week is going to be very quiet again. There are a few releases which may be of interest, things like the Fed minutes, although we've heard from a lot of policymakers now over the course of the last week, and it seems very clear that many of them are supporting now tapering towards the end of the year. We'll learn a lot more about that, the Jackson Hole, I imagine, but then the September meeting. But it does seem to be there's a growing consensus view for tapering towards the end of the year. So the Fed minutes will be interesting, but maybe not quite as pivotal or not quite as massive an event as that could be on other occasions. There were a couple of pieces of data scattered, I guess, around that. But to be honest, I think it's just going to be a bit of a quiet week. And I think actually the virus is probably going to be the most prominent thing, especially with relation to China, because I think that's driving a lot of sentiment in Asia right now in particular. But I think the virus story everywhere is going to continue to dominate, especially in these kind of lighter data and lighter news flow moments that the summer typically brings.
Okay, Craig, thanks very much for joining us. Have a very good weekend and we'll speak to you again soon.
Thank you.
The Oanda Podcast.